It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. And this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color for the next hour. And we hope you are there on the other end for the whole hour. Welcome to all the regulars. Again, I know we say it a lot, but we mean it a lot. Without you, there's no real reason to do this. And then, if you're new to the show because someone told you or you just happen to have your radio on this channel, stick with us. We'll talk about all kinds of interesting things that have to do with everybody. I can't think of a larger percentage of the population that's touched by any subject than money, since we all kind of need some. More is better, and more is what we got this week. We'll get there in a moment. And all in all, if you want to hear what we have to say, that's all well and good. But if you want to talk about something or ask questions or anything, pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255, and the callers will always get priority as long as we're doing this show and have anything to say about it. So think about it. Give us a call, and we will have a trivia question at the beginning of the second segment. And there's so many topics that are relevant right now. It's almost difficult to figure out where to step off. But as usual, we do want to talk about the market, and I like to always give my little brief summary of what I thought about the week. And what I came up with for this week was it was a heck of a lot better than it felt.
Yeah, it was.
Does that seem about right?
Yeah, I was on vacation this week, so I wasn't following it as closely as I normally do, and I felt like every time I opened the stocks app on my phone, I just never knew what was going to pop up. It was up big or it was down big, and I really wasn't sure where it all settled out when I sat down this morning to prep for the show, but was pleasantly surprised. I figured it was up because Friday was up, and there were two down days before that.
But it was a short week.
But I wasn't sure. So, yeah, it was interesting. The Dow actually was the lowest of the three indexes, but it still added 1%. The S&P gained 1.8%, while the NASDAQ, which has been leading the markets for quite a while now, it didn't disappoint this week. It added 5.6%.
It can't get out of its own way. It goes up so fast.
It's crazy. The NASDAQ is now up more than 18% this year. Well, the NASDAQ 100 ETF, QQQ, is up almost 25%. And that is not from the low. That is year
after
to date.
After a 20-odd percent pullback.
Yeah, and crazy.
Yep.
That performance is better than any of the sectors of the S&P 500, better than any major country stock market, better than gold, which is up 18% year to date, and better than the long-term treasury ETF, TLT, which is up almost 24% this year.
Amazing.
Yeah. Technology is the best performing sector in the S&P. It's up almost 19% year to date, and that has a lot to do with why QQQ is performing so well. But it's still lagging QQQ by 6%, which is just incredible. The second best sector is communication services, which is up 8%. The worst performing sector is energy, which is not a surprise to anyone, and that's down 38%. But it is up 52% from its March lows. That's how far it dropped. Pretty crazy.
It overkill.
Speaking of March lows, some international countries have seen rebounds like oil, similar to what oil has seen. Australia and Germany have both rallied more than 50% since their lowest point, and they are both still negative on the year. Brazil, Canada, and India have all rallied more than 48% since their low, and they are all still negative on the year. Meanwhile, China has rallied just 38%, and it's now up over 16% year-to-date. So China is the most overbought stock market in the world right now, which makes me like it less
not
than I already did. Yeah, I don't. That's a trade I'm not
crazier.
Really understanding right now.
Nope.
I don't see it. But
if you're a momentum buyer, beware.
The pandemic has really left the large cap tech stocks alone, as you may have noticed. In fact, there are now four companies worth more than $1 trillion, and they are all large cap tech stocks.
And three of them are over 1.5.
Yep. Apple is the largest at 1.66, then Microsoft at 1.63, then Amazon at 1.59.
That's trillion with a T.
Yeah. Then Google is just over 1 billion.
Yeah.
So in fifth place, Facebook at just under 700 million. So quite a long ways to go. Yeah. Finally, at number six, the first non-tech company, and that is Berkshire Hathaway at $434 billion. And ironically, this is the only one with a negative return year to date at negative 21%. So
he's buying his own stock back right now.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And by the way, Elon Musk is now wealthier than Warren Buffett.
Wow.
On paper.
Yeah, on paper, but still, that's pretty crazy.
You remember not that long ago
when he was broke.
Yeah.
Or saying he was broke.
Yeah.
His broke is a little different than most people's broke.
Well, but. Yeah. But he got in a little trouble more than once with the SEC for tweeting and that sort of thing. But one time he was angry that the stock price was falling, and he tweeted out that he would take the company private at 420, and it was selling in the 200s, I believe. 420.
Yeah.
Today, 1,500 what?
Yeah,
a
some
share?
Change.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. That's a deal that I wish he could have made. I wish I think he would wish that he could have made. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But that, yeah, I remember that event, and he did get in some trouble over that, some hot water with the SEC. But
messing with the stock price.
Yeah, he can't do that. But he wasn't wrong.
No. So. He was just trying to get a deal, I guess.
So as the company economy reopens, we continue to see improvement in the economic data. You don't have to look much farther than this week's ISM services sector to see that.
Ooh,
the report came in at 57.1, just shy of where it stood in February of this year, 57.3. Any level above 50 signals expansion, so 57 is pretty strong expansion. Of course, this is coming off much lower levels than February, but seeing that type of growth return is definitely a positive sign. With the recent market rise, bullish sentiment has increased, but still is outpaced by bearish sentiment. That's kind of a mixed signal. Investors are still nervous, but they are less nervous than they were over the last few weeks. We could see another bout of volatility to shake things up before the market pushes higher again. And I'm just basing that on the fact that bullish sentiment has increased and bearish sentiment has come down. Bear sentiment is still higher, so it's not a negative sign, but it is a sign that maybe investors are getting a little bit too confident in the market going up.
Yeah, the money flow has still been out of equities and into fixed income too.
That is true.
That's a really bullish sign for people like us who are contrarians by nature.
All the money going into bonds. Yeah,
that true. Means it's a mistake.
The last thing I want to mention is that earnings season for Q2 is starting, and if you were looking for a reason for volatility, that would be one. This is going to be a mess. Companies have pulled guidance. Analysts have been revising their estimates higher. It's just the setup for a really wild ride over the next few weeks, so
buckle up.
Just get ready.
All right, I got to go with a quick piece of house cleaning here. Howard Vergalis forgot to give the trivia answer on the last show, and I promised him I would. On July 11th of 1914, the baseball event that happened was that Babe Ruth played his first professional game for the Boston Red Sox. So that's cleaned up. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we have a trivia question brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Today's trivia question is about market capitalization and the computation of market indices, which we get a lot of questions on, and Adam talks about it quite frequently. And one of the big ones, probably the best overall measure of how the market is doing, is the S&P 500 index. And that is what we call a cap-weighted index, meaning the larger the company's value, the more it influences the change in the index itself. So today, here's the setup. If the 100 smallest out of the 500 companies were to double, that would send the S&P 500 index up 2.5%. Now, if Apple computer were to double, what would the change in the index be? And you have to get this one pretty much right on the percent. It's an even percentage, so I want an even percentage number. Good morning, Don.
Hey.
What's happening?
I want to educate you.
Please do.
Let's take Apple, for example. When you talk about the stock market going up and down, consider a line on a piece of paper. At the top, you put high. On the bottom, you put the low, right? Okay, now we're going to invest money. Now watch what happens. Apple is fixed right now at a certain amount of money. Now, I'm going to manipulate the market for you and show you something. I take some cash and I put it into Apple. Now you look at the stock market over the next 24 hours of watching. It's going down or it's going up, right?
That's typical.
So let's say I invested $1 million into it. What do you think the market's going to do?
Absolutely nothing.
There you go. You're smart. Boy, that's smart.
Hey.
Let me show you something. Why?
Because a million
didn't
is nothing.
Why didn't it go up?
Because people,
it's a good question,
in,
Don.
Yeah, people put in more buy orders than the sell orders during that period of time, and that can turn on a dime.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. It ain't a lot of money that's in the stock market. It's how it is advertised. The word Apple. Everybody likes the word Apple. But the truth of the matter is, they're manipulating the market every minute.
What? You don't think that the big pension plans manipulate the market? Institutional buyers?
You said it a while ago that the big boys, what was that market you mentioned a while ago?
What are we talking about, the S&P 500?
Or the NASDAQ?
Yeah.
Or the
NASDAQ? Yeah. All of that. But let me ask you. I'm saying something.
I'm listening.
I tried this. I'm sorry, but if I'm coming in wrong, I apologize.
That's all right. Okay. Just make your point.
My point is that the market is so manipulated now, I can't trust none of them no more.
You're not alone in feeling that way. Lots of people would agree mm-hmm. with you. There are a lot of ways to look at manipulation, and it's tough to say whether or not that one person or even one hedge fund could do that these days. I'm sure there are people with enough money out there to do it, but it's harder and harder as the economy grows and more money flows into the market, and you see companies valued as high as they are at $1.6 trillion for Apple. It's tough to manipulate that. You have to have so much money. A million is not even going to make a dent in it. It's crazy.
Well, I have news for you, young man. The markets today are so screwed.
Skewed?
What was that?
I said the markets today are so screwed up.
Yes,
it is. Yeah. It is. I mean,
let me say you something. You tell the investors out there on your program, I've been doing this for a long, long time. I may act stupid, talk stupid, but let me tell you something. I tried it with some markets that were so low that the stock wasn't worth nothing. I invested money into them markets and I watched the stock go up.
Well,
we all have.
Good for you.
All right, I want to move along, but I want to give you some comments off air for everybody to hear, too. So thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
Wait, let him take a shot at the trivia.
Oh, yeah, trivia question?
Yeah. No, I ain't playing that game.
Okay.
Yeah, basically everything Don says and believes is fundamentally correct. But as Don Rumsfeld once said, you go to war with the army you've got. So you have to make the fundamental investor decision, yes or no. If you make the decision no, get out and stay out. God bless you. You're not going to get wealthy, but you're not going to go broke and all that. I can make any argument you want to there. But if you decide yes, then the question becomes how. What we do is we take a very long, broad look at how we're in the market. Index shares, in some cases, some actively managed mutual funds. We don't like individual stocks. There's nothing but trouble ahead for individual stock pickers. You might win a few. You might lose a few. You will lose a few. But that's why we do things like buy the NASDAQ 100 biggest and the SPY, the S&P 500 index tracking share. And we look over time. And one of my favorite statistics and a question that I use in the office constantly is to anybody who's over about 50 or so, say, you remember when Ronald Reagan was first inaugurated? Oh, yeah. January 20th, 1981, right? What's the stock market at today, the Dow? 26,000 and change?
Yeah, that's right.
What was the Dow Jones Industrial Average on the day that Ronald Reagan first took office? And I get guesses anywhere from fairly close to thousands of points. The answer is 954. Now, let's draw a little timeline from 81 to today and count the hiccups we've had in there. We had the crash of 87. We had the, the 2001, 9/11. We've had a couple other major downers. We had the COVID. We had this and that and the other thing. And yet here we are, and it's the year 2020. And that's only 39 years by my count. And the Dow has gone from 954 to 26,000. So if you had purchased whatever amount of dollars in the S&P 500 index or the Dow Diamonds or whatever back on that day and done absolutely nothing the rest of your life, you'd have a lot more money right now. But you can do even better than that because there are periods in the market where many assets work together. Some go up when others go down. And that gives rise to the whole concept of full diversification where you throw in some stocks and some bonds and maybe some REITs and this and that, the other thing. And over time, you'll even outperform what the market indices did. And we know this because we've been tracking this for many, many years. We have, the market has. There is a best way to get into the market, but the only way to get in is when you make that yes or no decision, you better have at least 5 years to wait. The market is extremely risky in any time period under 5 years. At 5 years, the risk starts to drop to a tolerable level. It gets much better at 10. And at 15, you're pretty much guaranteed that you will be up. How much is anybody's guess? But our point is, the way we do business is not to say, I can beat the market, I can pick this stock, I can do that, I want to time it. Market timing is worth, at best, 2 or 3% of your long-term return. And another expression you'll hear us use a lot is that investors underperform their own assets by about 3%. What does that mean? How can you underperform your assets? The answer is very simple. Buy them and sell them at the wrong time. If you have a buy and hold philosophy that only changes when you're making a strategic move or you're doing some tactical sector rotation, if you don't try to time the market and say, I think this is at its peak. My God, how many peaks have we called for Apple Computer? How many peaks have we called for Amazon? When Amazon was at 1,000, oh my God. Today, what? 25, 3,000, yeah, some astronomical number this morning. So every time, to take it back, go back to real estate for a second. How many times have you in your life been out shopping for a house and you look at something and you really like it and it's really expensive? And you say, I'm just too late. You know, if I could have gotten in this when the last owner did, I'd make all that money. So you might or might not actually buy the house. And then 5 or 10 years go by and you decide you're going to sell it. And you look at the price you paid for it and say, man, I stole this thing.
Yep.
Because that's the way things tend to go over the long run. If you make good, prudent decisions on your investing, whether it's your stock market or the housing or whatever, the country tends to grow both through inflationary forces, but also through just the market economy that we so far have been allowed to hang on to. How long that'll last is anybody's guess, but that's another whole story, and I digress. But anyway, as I said, yes, the points are well made, but it's all about being prudent when you get in, prudent when you get out, and quite frankly, I've got a little piece I might talk about today that says, when do you know that you need a financial advisor? And a lot of people do not understand that they could use it. But we can help almost anybody, even if they don't become a client, just by talking common sense and long-term outlooks with people. So always remember that anybody who jumps into the market trying to get rich quickly, they're going to fail, period. And it will never be any different. Once in a while, you get a little lucky and put a profit in your pocket. Most of the time, it's the road to doom. So more fun on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. If you want to talk to us, you get right in. All right, I'm going to review the trivia question. The S&P 500 index, which is arguably one of the great indicators of the market in general, is called cap-weighted, meaning the size of the company influences how much the index, how much of the index is comprised of that particular stock, which isn't a very comforting way to say that. Anyway, big companies have a lot more impact on the S&P 500 than little ones. So if the bottom 100 stocks by size were to double, the S&P 500 index would rise 2.5%. If Apple Computer doubled in price, what would the change in the index be? And I'm going to give you all a big hint. It's positive. But you probably knew that.
Big hint.
Yeah, I would think so. All right. I want to dig into a couple of things, but I had one particular thing. I think I said it last week. I want to say it again. Credit freezes and elimination or reduction in things like credit card maximums and HELOCs, that sort of thing. A lot of banks are cutting them out. And if you don't know that, you might get a real ugly surprise because they're not going to inform you that you're going to use it one time. And what's going to happen is not pleasant to you. If you want to keep these things from happening, it is a very good idea to take all the credit cards that you have that you do not ever use and buy a tank of gas with them or something like that every month and then pay it off. And that little bit of activity in it will keep it from being flagged as a debt account, and it will probably then not be closed or reduced on your behalf. It's also good for your credit rating to have two or three active cards that are paid off all the time. So keep that in mind. And then I was talking about the real estate show before us too, and I wanted to make another comment. A young fellow called in about the home title lock, and Howard gave him a very nice dissertation on why it is not necessary. But there's one thing I would add to the analysis of why it's not necessary. I believe that there are very few people out there who should not routinely freeze their credit. You can freeze your credit at all three bureaus, and anytime you're applying for new credit and you want somebody to be able to inquire, they can do it. You have to unfreeze it during the period of time when they're looking and then freeze it again. When that happens, nobody, because what they're doing is they're not changing the deed over to themselves. What they're doing is taking out money against it, and then they can foreclose on it because technically it's supposed to be you that owes the money. Well, nobody can put anything on your home financially if your credit is locked down. So it's the simplest thing in the world to go to the three big agencies and just freeze your credit. Also, if you have a service like LifeLock, they will generally watch it for you and tell you, and they can also assist you with helping to freeze your credit. And if you have any questions about it, you can always go to ClarkHoward.com. Clark, our local guru of such things, is fantastic at things like that, 529 plans and so on and so forth. His website is a great resource for people, and you should use it. So just another little comment along the way. All right, guess what week it is? Tax week.
That's right.
It is. What would be April 15th is now July 15th. That's the good news and bad news all rolled into one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't filed yet, get busy. Now, yes, you can get an extension till October 15th. No problem whatsoever. But if you owe money, it's due Wednesday, period.
Yeah. Well, you can always delay paying it, but you're going to rack up interest and penalties. So
the only thing I hate worse than paying taxes is paying interest and penalty because I didn't pay them.
Exactly.
It's bad. So there's not very many of you out there anymore, but there are still some people who itemize deductions. The Tax Act of 2017, as part of its goal, was to reduce the number of people who actually have to file the itemized taxes. And it did a pretty good job of that. The jury is pretty much in on that tax law. There are some technical corrections we'd like to see made, and I think some will. But all in all, it benefited quite a lot of people, and one of the main benefits was it took a bunch of people into the non-itemizing, just used the standard deduction mode. So for the other few, there are some most overlooked tax deductions that I have an itemized list of here. First one is state sales tax. Now, most people understand that what they call the SALT deductions, state and local taxes. These are limited at $10,000 now. So when you have, say, real estate taxes that are high and sales taxes that are high, and depends what kind of home you own and how much money you spend, you might be at that limit. But if you're not, and we don't have a state income tax, know that on top of your property taxes and so on, you can use a state sales tax deduction. And this is easy to do. You can look it up in the IRS manual. It goes, what state are you in, and how much money are you claiming as income? And here's the number for your deduction. But if you happen to have purchased a new car, a major home remodel, an RV, a boat, something like that in 2019, you can take the sales tax that you paid on that and add it to the amount that's scheduled in the tables at IRS. So don't fail, if any of those things apply to you, to check into it and see if it could help you. Another one, reinvested dividends. This one's kind of interesting. It's not a tax deduction, but over time, if you're reinvesting dividends, you'll find that your basis on the stocks have changed quite a bit, and there's a lot of what you're reinvesting that might be return of capital. You got to really look at your 1099s carefully to see exactly what you've got. And the beware here is you may not have the cash in your pocket and you may owe some money. So check all the 1099s when they come in on brokerage statements and that sort of thing. All right, out-of-pocket charitable contributions. I think everybody understands that you can deduct charitable contributions if you itemize. They have to be legal from IRS. There is a publication, I think it's 529, but don't quote me on that one. I always have to look it up. A list of qualified charities that allow you to deduct the money that you give to them during the year. Now, for this year, I'm talking about last year's taxes now, but for this year, one time only, and maybe into the future if we can talk them into it, every taxpayer gets $300 deduction, even if you do not itemize. So make sure you pay this year any of your charitable contributions. Pay at least the first $300 from a taxable cash account, and you can take that as a direct deduction above the line. And when you're talking about tax deductions, above the line are the sweetest words you could ever hear. Next one, student loan interest paid by you or someone else. Well, not everybody can deduct student loan interest, but some people still can. You're going to have to check the rules on it. It has to do with income and so on, but don't forget to take a look. Now, moving expenses for a job, it's one that's also misunderstood quite a bit. If you're working and you take a new job and you had to spend some time looking around, generally what you pay in moving expenses is not deductible. But what if you're getting your first job? You just came out of college or whatever, and you have moving expenses to go to and assume your first job. Well, those are deductible. So for you young graduates who are going somewhere to get into the workforce once and for all, you have a one-time possible deduction for moving expenses. Document them well. Child and dependent care tax credit. Now, when you're talking about tax deductions and so on, the only prettier words than above-the-line deduction are tax credits, because that's a $1 to $1 reduction in your actual taxes. So look it up. The law allows up to $5,000 of expenses for child and dependent care credits. Make sure you see if you're qualified. Earned income tax credit for low low earners, you might be entitled to, a word I'm going to get back to, an earned income tax credit, even though you didn't really pay anything. State tax you paid last year, refinancing mortgage points, and jury money that you had to repay your employer. All things that people tend to overlook when they do their taxes. So know these things exist, and if you are itemizing this year, then do the best you can, because that standard deduction looks pretty good to most people. But if you can exceed that, it's worth the time and trouble that it takes to do it. So don't miss anything. That's my advice. You know how tax-averse we can all be. We're going to take one more quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. Quick review of the trivia question. How much would the S&P 500 rise if Apple stock doubled in price? Which would be interesting in itself. But that's another story. All right, I was asked by a listener this past week for some advice on Social Security claiming, and we chatted for a little while, and I dispensed the best advice I knew how. Lord knows I'm not a Social Security expert, but I know a lot more than most people just from being in this business for a long time. And he said, it would be fun to hear you talk about some of these concepts on air, and I want the word to go out right now that we will be doing that. I believe it'll start next week. I got into setting it up this week. And when you know something's complicated and you start trying to simplify it, it gets even more complicated. So it's going to take me some setup time on this thing, but I'm trying to break it down over a few weeks where everybody's case would resemble one of my examples. And again, it's not our goal here to tell you what to do. Our goal here is to tell you what can be done. And then you either do it the way you want to, you seek advice and decide what to do, or whatever. But you won't know what questions to ask unless you know what can be done. So we're basically here to teach you the questions. Now, meanwhile, Adam wants to talk about some things that people think, do, and say that maybe aren't exactly correct.
Yeah, they're called fallacies. And a fallacy is defined by Wikipedia as the use of invalid or otherwise faulty reasoning or quote-unquote wrong moves in the construction of an argument. When it comes to money and investing, there are no shortage of these pitfalls, and most of us are guilty of at least one of these things at some time or the other. I picked out some of the most common ones we see in our practice to discuss today in hopes that you can avoid some of them in the future. The first one is that stock / bond / ETF / mutual fund is just too expensive for me to buy.
I believe we've touched on that subject today.
Yeah. What people mean when they say that is that they have an amount of money they can invest and they want to get a lot of shares of something because they feel like that it is important to get a lot of shares to make more money. But it's not true. The only time when the price that this is true is when the price of one share is higher than what your total sum of money to invest. So look at Berkshire Hathaway, and if you don't have several hundred thousand dollars to invest in Berkshire Hathaway, you can't afford a share. You can buy a B share, which is different, but you can't afford the A share unless you can use one of those apps that allows you to buy fractional shares, and then maybe you could get in. But that is the one example where you truly can't get in. If you don't have $2,500, you can't buy, or $3,000, you can't buy Amazon right now. So,
have you seen the program Schwab just announced?
No.
I call it the slice of the Apple program. They allow you to invest in fractional shares with as little as $5. So let's say you want to give your kid a $5 present and he likes Apple, just picking on the one we've been talking about today. They buy $5 worth of Apple, which is some little tiny fraction of one share, and they're running it like a drip program where there's no cost for the brokerage. I think that's going to invade the entire brokerage industry.
It already kind of has, and it's been driven by the app, the new apps targeting millennial investors, yep. Robinhood and things like that.
Yeah, so now you've got the people like Robinhood that start the stuff, and then everybody else is a Me Too thing. It's like the zero commission brokerage houses, TD Schwab, so on. somebody gets it started,
yep.
the other ones are going to join them because you can't afford not to.
I mean, it makes sense. You sell fractional shares all the time.
Exactly.
If you have a reinvestment program, you're going to own fractional shares of, of everything in your account, and you can sell them. Why can't you just buy them? I don't understand why they don't let you, especially for really expensive stocks like Berkshire Hathaway and Amazon.
Well, I think it's probably expensive to run, so the companies were probably tending not to dive into it.
Maybe, but
with
you want
today's
to set yourself
computer systems,
apart. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, that's a good one, though. What did I pay for it? Well, who cares, basically?
Yeah, that's right. Other than it's entirely irrelevant what the price per share is. The price of a share is only important relative to other figures like total shares outstanding, earnings, book value, or a host of other metrics that are used to measure the financial performance of a company. The price of a share does not measure value in any way except when you look at the total shares outstanding. And,
right.
and it just doesn't make sense to look at the price of a share when you're considering an investment.
Another thing I've noticed over my 19 years in this business, and I've talked about it frequently, is when people are individual stock investors, you can ask them, what did you pay for your share of Apple? They're going to know to the dollar. They're going to know. But if you're buying the QQQ, which includes that and 99 other things,
you won't have any
then
idea.
I'll ask them what they paid for it. They don't know and they don't care.
They might say they might know they bought 100 shares, but that's probably it. Yeah.
So you get emotionally involved with a stock that you picked out and owned and bought because of your decision. You do not get emotionally attached to an index share. That's
no,
the number
not.
One thing I've noticed over time.
But one way to think about this is the example we used earlier, Tesla. In the last 3 months, if you had bought a share of Tesla at $400 and it's now trading over $1,000, just for an ease of calculation, you made over $600. In that same time period, you could have bought 10 shares of ExxonMobil for $40 each, same $400 investment, and it's now trading around $47. I wrote this a couple weeks ago, but you made $70. So which was a better investment? You got more shares of Exxon, but you only got one share of Tesla. But your return is way better on Tesla. So why does it matter what you paid, what the price per share is? It doesn't. Don't think about that.
If you were in the boardroom back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and your stock price started to go wild and got up into the hundreds, you were probably going to initiate a stock split.
Sure.
The reason for that back then was that a lot of people were aced out of the of buying individual shares. You couldn't afford a $1,600 share of Apple. Remember when Apple split 7-1 or something like that?
Yeah.
And they dropped their price way down. Well, that was for that very reason, that more and more people who are interested in maybe buying some can now afford it. Well, nobody cares about that stuff anymore because of the fractional share programs.
Yep, it's true. And you're seeing it more and more, these expensive
stock
prices.
Yeah, in fact, the feather in their cap is the $1,500 stock. If you're in the boardroom now, that you drove the stock up to 1500,
exactly.
You look good.
Look how successful I
am. And love it.
Yeah. Everyone hopes to get to the Berkshire status.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
So the second one that I picked out to talk about was, I am diversified. I own SPY. Now, just because an ETF has 500 stocks does not make it diversified. Now, SPY is fairly diversified. Within the market, it is. But buying a single ETF that contains only large cap U.S. stocks, it diversifies you out of single stock risk. It does not diversify you out of market risk. So when the market moves, it goes up and down, especially down. It tends to move in uniform, big down days. Everything's going to get the rising tide or the lowering tide is going to sink all boats. And it's not going to diversify you out of that risk. Just look at March of this year. And owning SPY is definitely less risky than owning a single stock, but you've only addressed part of the problem. So just remember that. Don't think that, I'm good to go. I have this one ETF that owns a bunch of stocks.
Yeah, there are seven fundamental classes of assets. Domestic stocks are one, and large cap domestic stocks are a fraction of that 1/7.
Yep. The third one is, this stock only ever goes up. This is so common. People look at a stock on a multi-year run and wish they had gotten in several years ago, and then they justify that lofty valuation by saying, oh, it only ever goes up. So they buy it, and guess what happens that day? It goes down.
Boom.
Yep. And that is a very, very common one, and it's very easy to see why people make that mistake, because if you look at a great chart and it's only ever going up, you think, well, I know I missed it before, but I might as well get in right now. And there right now just happens to be the peak.
When people tell me that, I always just look at them and say, you caused it.
Exactly.
Real nice, right?
Yep. Fourth, I'm just waiting to break even. Listen, sometimes you make mistakes and you buy a dog and you have to call it and sell it, take the loss on it, put it in something else, because the problem with this one is that the opportunity cost of not selling your bad investment is that during that time, let's say SPY is going up and yours is going down, you lost all that money by not selling and buying SPY. So what was the right move? The right move was to sell, cut your losses, and go to something else.
Yeah, lick your wounds later after the sale is made.
The last one is analysis paralysis. Some investors just can't get out of their own way. They want to cut things six ways to Sunday, make sure it's the absolute best pick out there, and by the time they make the decision, the market's gone up 500 points and they've already missed out on everything. So just don't overanalyze.
All right, if Apple were to double, the S&P 500 index would go up 6% just based on that. All right, we'll be back next week. We'll see you then. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.